This piece was brought to you by Roberta's. Roberta'sPizza.com.
This week on Meat & Three, we're exploring the culinary wonders of urban New Jersey with a tour through Newark. We speak to Frank Mentisana at Phillips Academy Public Charter School.
This idea of family style and made from scratch lunches continues to be a bit of an anomaly in the city.
We also hear from Gil Speyer from All Points West Distillery.
Newark used to have an incredibly rich beverage alcohol history.
And we'll tour Aero Farms, the world's largest indoor vertical farm.
We're growing using 390 times more productivity than field farming and 95% less water.
Tune in to this week's Meat & Three on Heritage Radio Network to be amazed at the wonders of Newark. That's Meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show Life's a Banquet. The show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible!
Starring your hosts, me, Brenton Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about chocolate and wine and bread, champagne and scandal and crackers in bed.
I'm drunk!
Always.
Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet.
One another?
Consider it done.
Welcome to Life's a Banquet, the podcast about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and Zara. Breton.
Oh, thank you.
Brian.
I got Zara, Sarah, Tara.
Pourable.
Tara. Pourable.
With your host, Zara Tangora.
And Breton Scott.
What up?
Well, you know, it's been a crazy week out there.
It has been, huh?
Mercury has been in retrograde for nearly 3 weeks. It's coming to a halt, I think, in tomorrow.
Yeah, everything that I have is broken, smashed to bits. Scrambled, fried.
Yep, scrambled, fried. Cell phone's not working. Internet's out.
Yeah.
People, I was waiting for the Q train yesterday, and this woman walks by me hustling. She was very large, and
And in charge.
Why? Large and in charge, and she was just shuffling down the subway platform, and I was just... It wasn't even crowded. I was the only person. She just looked straight at me 15 feet away, and she just clump, 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 like coming toward me. And I was like, this is it, Breton. This is your moment. It's over on the Q train.
What?
And then she just looked by me, and she scowled. She was like,
she growled in your face?
She growled in my face.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Well, I mean, you just gave a reason. Mercury's in retrograde. Also, the world is ablaze.
Ablaze. I thought I had not washed off my Ash Wednesday ashes, and I thought, like, the cross had turned into,
that was four
like, a
weeks
bad
ago.
Nazi symbol, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I thought I was going to have my Larry David, like, Catholic moment. No. Like, the ash, it was a cross, and then it... Well, I actually had just washed my face, so that was not the case.
Good Lord have mercy.
I like that rhyme. Zara, tell me about your week.
I had a good week. I thought we were going to talk at the same time.
Oh, that is hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
I mean.
Okay. Anyway, my week was good. I have a new job and I was doing a tasting. So I work in the kitchen at my home for a couple days, shopping, planning, mincing, chopping, frying, oil everywhere in my hair. Lots of sweeping and cleaning. But at the end of the day, I came out with a couple of really cool things.
I want to hear about it.
Well, one I gave you, which immediately you rejected, but then
what?
Ate the whole thing. When
what?
I saw you at the bar, I gave you a sample of the homemade Oreo I made.
Oh, homemade Oreo. No, I've had them before.
And
I just
goes,
in that particular moment, Zara came over and gave me a large, sweet, sugary cookie, and I was drinking a margarita, which is not what you really want. And I was like, well, I'll try it. Somebody hands you a cookie. How dare they?
I feel you. I don't normally want to eat a big cookie either.
But it was very delicious.
Thank you. So I made some homemade Oreos. I've been perfecting the perfect queso recipe, which I think I nailed.
Tell us about your queso.
My queso. My queso brings all the boys to the yard.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I am now using a little bit of American cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care if you guys out there don't like American cheese. Breton?
Judge.
Don't judge me. Cheddar cheese and also cream and also cream cheese.
Yep, classic.
And also chipotle and adobo.
Probably people, all of our listeners in Texas are like, nah, I have this.
New York City?
They're making
salsa from New York City.
they forgot the adobo.
That was one of the great commercials from the 1990s.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Pace picante salsa.
Mm-hmm.
What have you been making this week, Ding Dong?
Oh my God, I outdid myself. Again, I've outdone myself. I made a panini? I made enchiladas.
Get out of town.
To go with your queso sauce, too, but they didn't.
They never met.
No, they never met. But I made some enchiladas and I made a delicious mole sauce with some of the chilies that I'd brought back from Mexico.
Ooh.
Right? So I've got all this stuff just dried and waiting in there. And then I used tortillas that I smuggled in that I got in Mexico City. I popped them in the freezer on this week's episode of Pull It Out of Your Freezer.
Whip it out of your freezer.
I was shocked as to how well those tortillas held up in the freezer. I've never put a tortilla in the freezer.
Oh, we always used to put tortillas in the freezer because at Brucey we would not use them often, but we'd have to get big cases.
Yep, you have to put them. Yeah. Well, I learned something new and I... You know what? It was so funny. I was very stressed out. I was like, oh, God, enchiladas. Like, I got to stuff and roll everything. So I've been using my stopwatch this week for undesired tasks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, God, I don't want to clean out this. I don't want to clean up my fridge. I'm like, can I do it in under 6 minutes? Start stopwatch and go. So I said, can I stuff 18 enchiladas in under 4 minutes? And I did it.
What?
I just like stuff, roll, place, stuff, roll, place, stuff.
You and made 18 enchiladas?
Uh-huh.
I guess my invitation to the enchilada party must have got lost in the mail.
I refroze it. It lives in the freezer. Nobody ever eats it. But I used that mole sauce, black beans, goat cheese, and some of the aged provolone. So I had a little Italian influence. You know what I'm saying?
That sounds so delicious.
Oh my God.
Mamma mia.
Mamma mia, right? God, the magic of the oven never ceases to amaze me.
Yes, we are so lucky for heat and fire, aren't we, Frankenstein?
We are. I was walking along the quiet streets of Fort Greene today, brownstone lined streets, picture it, Hollywood-esque. They're shooting several seasons of, what's that called, Law and Order?
I cannot believe that show is still on the air.
It's exactly. In order to be an actor in New York, you have to be an extra in Law and Order. Anyway, I found a 1951 copy of Woman's Day magazine.
Oh my gosh.
It was called Woman's World, I think, back then. And in it was just these gorgeous, lots of colored ads, which I was surprised. It was a very large format magazine. Ooh. And I meant to bring it so we could look at it on the radio. But
yeah,
then I realized
that would have been really exciting for everyone.
Then I realized that our listeners can't view it. Although, if you're looking at us right now, we are recording our video, so you can check that out on our YouTube page.
I'm interested to see the ads for like tampons and maxi pads from like the 1950s. It's like, women, if you are bleeding, please don't let anybody know.
Yeah,
wrap it up, seal it up, pack it up, pack it in.
Yeah, wear these pointy bras. And
keep quiet.
Yeah, and keep quiet.
Let the man do it.
Yeah, that's just lots of cleaning, lots of just, you know, lots of eggs. It's just that...
Lots of eggs.
We're in shoulder season.
We are in shoulder season, which is when the weather is saying one... when your mind is telling yes, but your body is telling you no.
Yep. It's like neither... The asparagus hasn't come yet.
There's nothing.
There's no ramps. There's...
No.
The apples are mealy. The potatoes are soft.
Yeah. Exactly.
A squash. I was like, who wants to eat a squash?
If I have to bite into another raw onion this winter, I don't know what I'll do.
I know. Gosh.
I went to a really lovely dinner. I hadn't been to this restaurant in a while, but it is a restaurant I've been to many, many times in the past. Estella. And it is just confirmed for me as the most perfect restaurant in New York City. We had such a lovely time. I went on a hot, sizzling, steamy date the other night. We ate steak tartare and their beautiful endive salad, which I ripped off a million times.
That's right. I was a couple blocks away at a restaurant called Double Zero eating vegan pizza.
Yum.
You know what? I have to say I didn't see the point. I'm like, well, I just want regular pizza. But if you're vegan, I think it was really good. It was packed on a Saturday night. Lots of women, about 90% female crowd. A little bit loud for me.
You're being so nice right now.
high top tables, and they were all communal tables, and you got shoved in. I mean, I was shoved into that table.
That sounds great.
And yeah, it was a really great experience.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. But it's interesting you talk about Double Zero, because that is a kind of flower.
Oh my God.
And flower power is what our episode today is about.
You know what? I always get so nervous how we're going to gracefully... announce our topic?
I ungracefully do it each week. I'm
but
like,
this was
know,
a really good one.
It was one of the better transitions.
Double
that we've
zero.
Had.
So yeah, I think they named that restaurant obviously after right. after the thing.
But, was it gluten free though too?
They had a gluten free option, which was I believe I didn't try it. We ordered it, but the waiter messed up. But it didn't matter because I didn't.
You're
I
like, this like, all
I'm
tastes
already
like
vegan. Like, this is, you know, calm down.
Yeah, there's a great way to eat vegan, and I think it usually misses the mark. It's like, don't imitate. Well, I think don't imitate.
That's what we were talking about. And listeners, if you're out there wondering, you know, a lot of the menu items said, quote, like, quotation, charcuterie plate.
Yeah.
And then it was
no
a
thanks.
Bunch of vegetables disguised, you know, crispy and that. But it did not resemble meat at all. Also, my opinion on that is why not just glorify the actual vegetables because
right.
they are, to me, wonderful in themselves, right?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't, like, eggplant bacon.
No.
Like, well, why not just do crispy eggplant? That sounds better. Italians aren't being like, eggplant or, you know, sausage disc eggplant lasagna. No, they call it eggplant parmesan.
Yeah, you would get kicked out of Italy for making eggplant they're not sausage
like,
disc.
They're not like zucchini zoodles. Italians
no.
are like, a fried zucchini.
Yeah. You eat a zucchini or you go straight as a hella.
So anyway, I'm
sorry,
a total
Italy.
Opinionated jerk. And you can go ahead, email me or just unfollow me. I don't
yeah.
really care.
Or sue us. Yeah. Or please don't. Please don't sue us.
Just kidding. Call me lawyer.
Ladies, I think the point here is what Brenton is trying to say. It's okay to get your periods and it's okay to eat cauliflower and not pretend that it's sausage.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
So I would say...
Let's talk about flour.
Okay. So flour. First of all, when we picked the topic, I thought, oh, that's too boring. And then I thought, wait a second. How could you possibly, as a
cook... What the hell is going on in there?
As a human,
hey,
as anything...
Knock it off.
As
sorry,
anything... What the... Okay.
I'm sorry, Matt was making
I
a
was
lot
like,
of noise
as
in
anything,
there. Get back on track.
How
flour.
Could you possibly get by, as a cook, as a human, as any person, without encountering flour, right? In
yeah.
our day and age, let's say, I mean, around Thanksgiving. Let's say you hate cooking. Doesn't matter. At some point, one of your fried breadsticks is going to be dredged in flour first.
Yeah.
You know, unbeknownst to
a your... A fried breadstick?
Cheese stick. Sorry. Mozzarella stick. But a...
God damn it. You're
Well, from where
obsessed.
I come from, we fry our breadsticks. And they're called Gardettos. Those little breadsticks in Gardettos are the best part. And they are deep fried. They're deep fried sesame breadsticks.
Yeah.
We all know those, you know, that and the Melba toast.
I'll eat almost anything. I don't care. Fry it. Grill it.
So let's talk about flour. Now, without wheat, we can't have flour. Well, that's not true. I mean, you can call it corn flour.
Right.
A flour, I guess, could be described, or the definition is a powdered cereal grain, right?
Right. Well, is cocaine flour?
Well, no, but this does remind me of my cocaine story.
Please.
Which I told you that back in the days, back in the 90s, when you had to take a picture and develop it.
Oh, yes.
I know there's some young kids that are doing it again, but I...
Cocaine or picture developing?
I took I had a roommate that had all these $100 bills. She was going on vacation, and I rolled them up and put flour all over the table and pretended I did mass amounts of cocaine. I think I told you the story, and then
I got
the picture developed, and then when I went to pick it up, the girl scowled at me. She's like, here's your photos, jerk.
Oh, really?
She didn't say jerk, but she looked at me with her eyes, and they said jerk. And then inside was a note saying, the next time you do this, we know who you are. You use your credit card, and we're going to report you to the police for your massive
God.
Amounts of cocaine use.
What?
But I had put a bag of flour all over my face.
So you can... Flour is versatile, I guess, is what you're trying to say.
So flour's obviously very versatile, right? Okay. So flour, without wheat. Now, parts of the wheat are the endosperm, the germ.
Ooh.
Right, and...
You like that. Sperm.
Did somebody say sperm?
Did somebody... Smell sperm.
But so now here's, okay, where to start with flour. Now, it all started with this craze of how flour got a bad rap. We're talking about gluten-free, right? All the gluten stuff that's been going on.
No thanks, gluten-free people.
Well,
goodbye.
Here in celiac, and this is a disease that should be taken very seriously, but I think the problem that we had with flour in the 20th century was let's talk about Monsanto. And
yeah,
what they had to do with
it.
And the way that we milled our flour. So first of all, I wanted to describe different kinds of flours and the history of it. Now, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, as they upped the use of Roundup, which is that pesticide.
Yep, that gives people cancer.
They had more and more and more and more pesticide put on. And the flours, you know, they're using these big threshers to, mm-hmm. to harvest the flour. And then they're running the actual grain through steel mills.
Steel mills.
Which basically you take a seed and you're crushing it up into a fine powder. And through these steel mills, it heats up so drastically that it basically torches out any good quality of that grain.
Right.
And so that's why they're like, enrich it. Mm. And who doesn't want something enriched?
What's it enriched with?
It's enriched with vitamins and minerals because they were lost. So then we had to put riboflavin and all those stuff back into the flour so that it become healthy again. And then they could market it as a healthy product. And with all that pesticide and everything, obviously more people started getting sick. And their doctors are like, for every time I tell somebody they're gluten-free, I got $1,000.
Right.
Right. So suddenly it's a gluten-free craze, blah, blah, blah. And now fast forward, and now we're in 2019.
So interesting, Brent. And so Monsanto is, just for anyone out there, responsible for making the Roundup.
Okay, so flour. Again, this is a whole, there's books written about it. There's documentaries you can
watch. I've never heard of it before
But
today.
I just wanted to disseminate the different types of flour and then the different ways of milling it. So there's stone ground flour and steel milled flour. So a stone ground flour is the old way where they would actually grind it with, stones that were, something, and that it doesn't heat up as much, therefore preserving the rich vitamin and, healthful benefits of the wheat plant.
Wow.
And I read also that in America, you can call something stone ground flour if it has already passed through a steel mill, but then goes through a stone
what?
Mill.
What? Mm-hmm. Sneaky American pieces of shit.
Yeah,
guys,
they're like,
America, let's get it together for so many reasons, but this first...
Mm-hmm. Now, and then
most importantly, flour.
I'm sure those of you have gone through a grocery store and wondered, like, oh my gosh, there's so many different kinds of flour. There's white whole wheat flour, pastry flour, whole wheat pastry flour, 00 flour, Italian flour. There's a million different kinds of flour. There's white lily, cake flour.
Yeah, swamp flour.
Listen, swamp flour. There are too many flours to keep track of. And what I'll tell you is that in general, all-purpose flour is from the hard, it's the standard kind of like hard winter wheat flour, berry, or wheat flour. And then pastry flour is made from soft winter wheat. And
I really didn't know that. I thought it was just ground finer.
No, they're grown in different, actually, times of the year in different regions of the United States. So the further south you get a lot of the soft winter wheat, it actually goes kind of up around Mississippi, Missouri.
Wow.
And they're usually planted later in the season and harvested in the spring.
What in the hell, Brent? You know so much about flour.
Oh, I know. I love flour.
I love flour.
So white lily flour, that pastry flour, is associated with like making biscuits.
Mm.
And you would probably use a pastry flour because it's a lower protein content. Therefore, you would do things that don't require yeast. That's why. So, pastries. I personally, in my pie crust, use equal amounts of pastry flour and all-purpose flour because I find it gives a tender crumb.
That's amazing.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say you're a regular old Bill Nye.
Exactly. Right. But
that's incredible.
And so, the higher the protein content in bread flour, for example, which when bread machines came around. Suddenly they're like, bread flour.
Yeah.
It just has a higher protein content, which has more gluten. Watch out, gluten-free people.
I mean.
And then, but that actually, as you work the dough and knead the dough and knead the flour, then it gives the yeast something to hold on to, which creates greater structure, thus having better bread, right?
Yeah,
so
amazing.
Higher protein content. I mean, I could go on and on about types of flour.
I wish you would.
Okay,
we have 3 hours for this podcast.
All right, everybody, put on your...
Everyone, put on your
take
flour
off your
sack.
Close your windows. Lock the doors. Wait, that was from...
Everybody, lock yourself in the closet. It's Life's a Banquet, the flour episode. Well, that's really interesting, Breton.
So just a brief introduction to flour.
And yeah.
I think if you want to be healthy and you're concerned about what type of flour you should get, you should try to get that einkorn flour, which is an ancient grain. I mean, flour, wheat has been... around the Fertile Crescent, what is now known as Syria and all that.
Right.
8,000 BC, they've been using wheat.
Yeah, it's one of our oldest. And you're saying we can find this flour thing you talk about at the supermarket?
Einkorn, yeah, E-I-N. It's I think Jovial is an actual brand. Yeah,
I was kidding. I meant like any flour. I was pretending like I'd never heard of it before.
Yes, it was found at this. I'm so into flour right now. I can't concentrate on anything else.
He cannot make any jokes about flour. You are serious about flour. I'm trying to tease you about flour. You're like, flour.
420.
It is. Okay, so it's 4:20. Should we take a break and get mad high quickly? Yeah. And then come back and I'll tell you a story about flour?
Yeah, sure.
All right, we're gonna get baked up in here like a loaf of bread.
Yeah. All right, here we go. We're ready for a break here.
We're taking a break, Matt, God damn it.
I know, I'm paying attention.
I gotta cut commercial.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my
God. Thank God for one hitters.
Thank the Lord.
You know what?
Lord
actually, I
heaven.
Decided to. I'm no longer on marijuana.
You're no longer on
Mm-mm.
weed.
9 days sober.
Wow,
and by
that's
sober,
amazing.
I mean.
How do you feel?
Well, I've noticed I've been drinking more.
Oh, perfect. I Have you been doing more heroin?
More heroin and more drinking.
Look
no,
at this.
Just kidding. Less
Look
heroin.
At this here. This is the 10th call in a row today I've gotten from British Columbia. Someone mm-hmm. in Canada is pranking me, and I'm not into it.
Well, there's...
Listen, Canada, the exactly. entire country, please stop it. You're on blast. Leave
so,
me alone.
Zara, I want to hear what you found when you were researching flour.
I bet you would.
Mm-hmm.
All
I
right,
really
I'll tell you. Okay, so my flour perspective today... is I wanted to tell you a story about flour sack clothing, particularly flour sack dresses, that became very popular during a certain hard time in this country. And I want to tell you this story because it has to kind of do with flour, but it also is just a story of resourcefulness, which on this podcast, as you know, we love it. We're talking about highs and lows and how people deal mm-hmm. with really tough situations. And being that after this presidency, we're probably going to go into another Great Depression, I feel like it's worth trying to figure out how to do these things again now so we're not stuck when...
get our flour... When, folks, start saving your flour sacks.
Get about your feed sacks, everyone. It's Great Depression time here on Life's Banquet. Okay, so a little bit about the year 1929. It was the year of the famous St. Valentine's Day massacre by the notorious gangster Al Capone in Chicago.
Never forget it.
Oh, I know. It was very bloody. That little guy. You know that Al Capone got married at the church, like up the street from my house.
Mm-hmm.
Like right
he used
by
to
a
vacation in up in northern Wisconsin.
Really?
Uh-huh.
What couldn't he do? Are we following in his direct footsteps? Are we descendants of Al Capone? Also, 1929, the Museum of Modern Art opens in New York City, and it was the first Academy Awards ever.
Really?
1929. My grandmother, Violet Silverne, God rest her soul, was also 10 years old at the time, in case anyone was wondering about my grandma's age. So anyway, the Great Depression in the United States began on October 29th when the stock market crashed of 1929. After that, we went into something known as the Great Depression, a horrible time in this country and around the world. Unemployment in the U.S. rose to 25%. Which
wow.
is extremely high.
Yeah, that is very
high. I mean, it's just really weird when you think back about the Great Depression. And I think we, you know, with a lot of things in history, like, whoa, that sounds really crazy. But can you imagine if just right now, like 25% of people in this country were out of work?
Yeah, well, that's why our parents were brought up by their right. parents and they're still afraid. That's
right.
why they still reuse their Christmas wrapping paper. Because they're like, oh, God.
Totally.
Because like, one day you wouldn't be able to, you actually... Not only could you not afford it, there just wasn't any to go around.
Right. And in some sense, I think that living with that kind of mentality is why not save your Christmas wrapping paper? I mean, I don't do stuff like that necessarily, but when you think about how much we waste and throw away just because we think there's always
more.
Because
we can. Because we can.
Right? Like maybe to just kind of take away from this story when it's all over that we don't have to just, it's
you know
okay
what?
To be thrifty,
I
even
have
if
been,
you have money.
I have been freelancing now and I don't, so I have some months I have a lot of money and then.
Yeah.
A lot of months I have very little money, and yeah. since I've been freelancing, I noticed that I am way better about using everything in my fridge.
Yeah.
I waste way less. Like
I waste no food either.
I waste no food. I mean, everything has been used. I even use my broccoli stems, my cauliflower.
What'd you do with those guys?
Did
you make a cauliflower dress out of it?
Eat them. I don't even care. Dehydrate them, powder them. Put them around my eyes at night. But no, but it's funny. Like
throw them in a bag.
Because of resourcefulness, I'm like, you know what? I should use all of this. My freezer yeah. is perfectly, I don't have stuff that I'm like, oh God, I don't know. You
totally.
Know.
I'm in the same vibe. And I just think it really, this is kind of a good way to remember that we should kind of be doing that. So construction across the world was virtually halted. Farming communities in rural areas suffered the most and crop prices fell about 60%. A traditional discussion of commodity bag of sewing a traditional discussion of the commodity bag, which is basically any flour sack or any feed sack, any grain sack, sugar sack. They were kind of all the same, but mostly it was flour.
Potato sacks?
Yes. Well, potato sacks were a little scratchy.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, these were
that's
like...
That's what children would jump in them and
exactly.
In county fairs,
that's a,
right?
That's a very dangerous game.
wrap your feet up, tie it around, and everybody run into each other.
Yeah, and in a sack. Knock your front teeth out. It's great. Yeah. But so anyway, they started doing this around the Great Depression, and it kind of tapered out around World War II. But the origins actually are more than 100 years old. So that it became popular in the Great Depression. But yeah, the origins are more than 100 years old. So
that's crazy.
I know. So everyone was being really frugal, and they would make this into a variety of these beautiful sacks into a variety of things. And as people started using them more, these companies started making these really gorgeous patterns on the sack. So flour sacks were not just like random sacks of flour. They had gorgeous like floral designs.
And they were sort of
really cool patterns.
I happened to come across that, and they said that they were actually doing that.
Because
purposely, right? Because like, oh, there's a need
they
for
noticed that first that people were making clothes out of them, and then they're like, well, let's design these beautifully. So can you just imagine like going in the store and like a big sack of flour had this gorgeous printed design
back
on
when,
them?
Back when our great European ancestors and other ancestors with who knows where they're from, but had beautiful, beautiful graphic design techniques, hand printed, hand lettered, hand sewn. Oh,
everyone
my God,
just you, cared more about everything.
Can you imagine the beauty?
Yeah, I know. So anyway, everyone started making their clothes out of flour sacks. And a sack for a 100-pound thing of flour would make a shirt or a blouse, but a dress usually required 3 100-pound flour sacks. But they could also be made from feed sacks. So a lot of people who lived on farms and were getting feed and grain and stuff like that.
Do you think that explains some of those whenever you think of, when we think of the, I don't know, television shows from the 1940s and 50s where all, you know, in the would take place in the country.
Yeah.
That they have all these like flour printed. That was all based off flour.
Absolutely.
Sack, right?
Yes. Well. The Dust Bowl, a bunch of dusty ass people in the middle of the country covered in dust and flour sack dresses. It's the romantic to think about now, but I don't think it was probably that great then. So much dust, so much flour and dust. So anyway, the manufacturers took notice of this, and they started offering different prints such as flowers, pretty border designs, doll and toy patterns. They wanted to make it into something appealing, and they started putting pattern designs that came with the flour sacks that would wash off. They were in vegetable ink, so your flour sack would come with basically a pattern or like different ideas on it that was printed in washable ink, and then when you washed it, that the instructions would wash off, so you could use all the material for your dress.
That is really...
I know.
It's really nice.
Yeah, isn't that really crazy? The Chinese were also doing this, and they were calling them hunger sacks.
I wonder why. Oh, just speak. Just,
yeah,
just probably the way it translated
exactly.
or something.
At that time, an estimated 3.5 million women and children wore flour sack clothing during the Great Depression. It was a way of life because times were very hard. And then during World War II, there was a ration on printed fabric. And so people, again, had to turn to the flour sacks if they wanted any kind of printed stuff. But they were beautiful. They didn't look like a sack. They looked gorgeous. The patterns were nice. They were really like today. I don't know. I'm sure you could find something like that in a vintage store and be like $100.
You know what? I'm sure. I'm looking at some of these pictures right now. A lot of them are in black and white, but you see a lot of gingham plaids.
Yes, the gingham plaid was actually the first. The red and white gingham plaid was the first pattern that they printed on the sack once they noticed people started making clothes out of them.
I mean, fashion people. This is
It's such an interesting
fascinating
cross
section
between fashion and food. It's really weird.
Food and fashion.
Food,
cheap boy moda. I used to work with I used to work at an Italian restaurant in Chicago, and the man that owned it, Bruno.
Oh.
And Bruno had, his wife was in the fashion industry, so their windows out front, they would dress in models and support local fashion designers.
Okay.
And it was called Follia, Cibo e Moda.
Oh, wow.
And he would say, good food, good shoes, good wine.
Wow, that's all you need, really.
And he was a horrible, horrible human.
Oh, yes. He sounds terrible.
It was terrible.
At least he had good taste.
I got fired for telling a woman she was the worst customer of my entire life. And I was honest.
That sounds wrong. They should have probably kept you. How old are you?
I was 23 or something.
Yeah, no, perfect. A 23-year-old with an attitude that just won't quit.
Yeah, get the...
It's no problem.
She wanted fresh tomatoes.
You're promoted. What a fresh tomatoes? Was it out of season?
No, it was in season, and I had forgotten, and so I apologized for forgetting, and I said, listen, I'm really sorry. It'll take me 1 minute. I'll get them right away. And she's like, you know what? You're the dumbest waiter I've ever had in my entire life. And I said, well, that's too bad because you're the worst customer I've ever had in my entire life.
Wow.
And then her husband tried to get up and punch me. And then I said, oh, what are you going to do? Punch your waiter?
Wow.
Anyway, it's very scary.
Sounds like a real bukyak.
We had to buy their whole dinner and then I got fired.
Madonna mia. That's no good.
Anyway.
So anyway, the packaging started changing after World War II in the 1950s and companies found it easier and cheaper to put the flour in a paper sack. Plus people were stopping being so poor and covered in dust.
We have so much more fashion.
Nobody wanted to wear paper underwear.
Yeah, I guess.
That didn't really take...
Throw it away. It absorbs the sweat and the odors.
These
and
paper socks
stays in
are
the
terrible.
Paper forever.
Bret and Scott's paper underwear.
Although, did you remember there were paper dresses that were popular in the 60s?
I don't remember.
Remember
that.
Like Campbell's would have paper dresses? I don't know.
No.
That's the whole thing. We'll get into that.
All right. On the next episode of Life's a Banquet, paper dresses and creamy soups. So anyway, to slow the changeover, the National Cotton Council began to sponsor these contests for women who could make the most exciting flour sack clothing. It was called National Cotton Bag Sewing Queen. And they took place all over the country with giveaways for whoever made the best stuff. And they ran ads in magazines like the Ladies Farm Journal, which I would do anything to get my hands on. Talk about Ladies Home Journal. I want to see the Ladies Farm Journal.
Oh, my God. I'm sure I can find some in Wisconsin at some antique stores.
Are your chickens misbehaving? Well, we've got a tip for you. And these people could win everything from automobiles. And in the national competition, they could win trips to Hollywood to compete in a movie, compete for movie studio tours and shopping sprees.
You hear that, Janet? We're going to Hollywood.
Exactly.
Like, Hollywood, California.
Pack your bags. Here we go to the Brown Derby.
Get your finest flower sack dresses. I love it.
I know. So I thought that was really cool and was very, it's an interesting story of resourcefulness, which I think is always important to remember because.
Well, and how ubiquitous flour is. I mean, there was so much, right? That we
absolutely.
We live on, you know, humans pretty much live on wheat.
Exactly.
Well, actually, not. We do.
And to all those people out there who are thinking they're gluten-free, if you just are interested in losing some weight or something, that's fine. Just do that. Stop eating flour. You'll probably lose weight. But please don't continue to give flour a bad rap and say, oh, I'm celiac. Also, some people are celiac, and that's a terrible thing to have. It's a really horrible, chronic, like, messed up condition that you do not want to have. So if you're just trying to maybe, like, cut back on whatever or be healthier in your own brain for whatever your version of healthy is, you want to lose some weight. Just call that what it is.
Well, I think it's important, again, what I said in the beginning is to concern yourself with what type of flour
exactly.
You're eating. Because a lot of times, you know, I've been traveled to and you go to Italy, you're like, that's so weird. My stomach wasn't upset or bloated when I had the pasta in Italy because
right. They
don't have these, well, Monsanto's not controlling their wheat industry as I know as of yet.
If you're eating good quality food, you're going to feel better unless you actually have an actual allergy.
You know what the other thing I always thought about? Is probably a long time ago, bread and, well, also wheat and flour, it perhaps was a bit more scarce and it wasn't as plentiful, perhaps, depending on where you were. So maybe we didn't get a bread basket.
Right.
I mean, or, you know, unlimited amounts of bread. Like, not everything had bread. We weren't constantly looking at Instagram with...
People, like, only had bread. So when you sat down in the Great Depression to have your, like, one slice of bread and one piece of cabbage, you didn't, get a bread basket first.
God, doesn't that sound good? Braised cabbage and butter with a slice of bread.
Absolutely. Yesterday I made, just going back to cabbage, I made a pulled pork recipe and I put equal amounts of pork and cabbage in it because I wanted to use less meat. Mm-hmm. And it came out so good. And I would have loved to just pile that high in a slice of crusty bread.
Well, next time. And next time you can.
I know. I have a question. Brenton, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. So on our Chef Recommends this week, what are some alternative flours that you have had experience with and maybe some tips for how people out there listening can use them?
Okay, well, alternative flours. Now, are these flours that contain gluten or not?
They can be either. And I mean, just anything other than AP flour, and it could be double zero flour, it could be chestnut flour. You know, it really does. It could be glutinous or not glutinous.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of words that you hear right now, I know because a lot of the cooking that I do, if I have events or for photo shoots or whatnot, there's lots of almond flour, right? Almond flour is not really flour. I mean, yes, it is a finely ground almond product. You know, it's almonds ground into a powder.
Yeah.
Almond flour. I don't use it that much. I use a lot of buckwheat flour, and buckwheat is actually more, it's more of a grass rather than wheat, and there's actually no gluten in it. So I use a lot of buckwheat flour when I make things, and I make crepes out of them and waffles, and you'll see a lot of recipes if you look online. And I'm going to quickly interject myself. Okay, hold on. Let me talk. Thank you. And it just lets you know that when you read a recipe and you're like, oh, well, this recipe has, it says buckwheat flour, but then it also calls for regular flour. You can use all buckwheat flour. It's just going to be a lot more. Buckwheat doesn't really have any gluten structure.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have any gluten. So it's not going to hold up. But what I read something about buckwheat is if you use it, and I love buckwheat, the flavor is delicious. If you beat it like with a whisk, or if you like really, really like take the back of a spoon, and
if you show it who's boss,
you're gonna start to work that dough a little bit, and it's gonna be a little bit looser and more. It will yield a more tender product. Anyway, buckwheat flour is really good. Just to let you know, the other flours that do contain gluten are rye flour, wheat, barley, and what's the other one? I forgot. Whatever. Ask your local food store.
I will eat almost anything.
Some people say oats have a little bit of gluten too. But anyway, buckwheat flour is a good one. And spelt. Spelt has gluten in it.
I love spelt.
But a wonderful flavor, right?
Yeah, a delicious flavor. There's a place in Hudson and also in Great Barrington called Baba Louie's Pizza. It's just stuck in the 90s, but the pizza is delicious and they have spelt crust and it's very good.
These are more ancient grains that are apparently supposed to be easier to digest.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that I was, if you didn't want to use, for like a whole wheat flour, you can, just to make sure that you get like a stone ground whole wheat flour.
Okay.
And that when you bake with it, to let it hydrate a little bit longer, up to like 2 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I've been reading. In fact, I read that about that on Serious Eats. Stella Park speaks of this.
Oh, cool. She's great.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, alternative flours. I love buckwheat. That's my choice. And what about for you?
I'm going to talk a little bit about... Okay, so I'm a pasta purist. Mm. And, you know, people have asked me over the years because I think they know that pasta is kind of my specialty. Hey, Zara, how do you make gluten-free pasta, especially at the restaurant and post? Like, you know, when I was doing catering. My answer is... Not intentionally. No, I'm not making gluten-free pasta. I don't mess around with corn pasta, rice pasta, kind of packaged things.
That's right, rice flour. Exactly.
I mean, my mom sometimes gets that stuff. She'll get like a corn pasta or like a quinoa lentil pasta or something. And if she's making it, I'll eat it. I'll try it. But I would never put it on a menu at a restaurant that I had my name behind, and I wouldn't serve it in my home. My one exception that I really, really do love and I choose to use. Now, don't get me wrong. I will mess around with anything, and if it's delicious, I'll use it. But deliciousness is always, when it comes to making pasta, my first goal. I don't care if it's gluten-free. Eat something else that's not gluten. Again, going back to kind of what we were talking about with veganism, like, I don't need to just fool you into thinking you're eating something. You could just eat something else.
Yeah, I don't want meat. I want the eggplant. Like, I want the delicious vegetables.
Exactly. And so in that same vein, I don't really try to do a fake out. However, I love chestnut flour pasta.
Chestnut flour.
I think chestnut flour pasta is absolutely delicious. We used to use it all the time at the restaurant. I will use it when I'm making pasta at home. It has this wonderful, sweet, nutty flavor and a really great, chewy texture to it. It's awesome.
We actually did an episode on chestnuts.
Hickory nuts. We did native nuts.
Right. The meat of nuts, yes.
Weird nuts.
Meat.
The Breton, yeah. Weird nuts. The Breton Scotts are Jim Morris story.
As the special guest, my dad, my Wisconsin father.
So I love that. I used to do a lasagna that had chestnut flour pasta, sausage, and like a sausage chestnut ragu and
that's
chev.
Right. If you're really in New York City, well, you can order chestnut flour online.
Yes,
pretty much
the internet.
The internet.
At pets.com.
Pets.com and amazon.com and nuts.com for real. But also if you're in New York City, Sahadi's has a wonderful chestnut flour.
Oh, that's a good tip. Sahadi's, which is on Atlantic Avenue in Forum Hill.
BK, Brooklyn.
It's great. So that's my tip.
Oh, that's a good one.
Chestnut flour for pasta.
Chef
recommends
delicious. Chestnut flour.
And then you can use it in certain baking things too. The chestnut flour donut can be good.
Now we always do a top three, for our three favorite things, obviously. Top three things to do with flour. Like that's kind of everything that we do in cooking. But, what maybe I could ask you, what are your top three either baked savory or sweet goods or something.
Okay.
Is that what we're kind of talking about?
Yeah, I think like a top three baked goods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would potentially use
mostly
wheat flour.
I think my number three top favorite baked good is a banana bread.
Oh.
I love a good banana bread.
Yeah.
With a crunchy, sugary coated top.
That's right.
Chocolate chips in it.
I love chocolate chips, chunks.
Chips and chunks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotta have the chunks.
My number two is a scone.
A scone.
Which is basically just a ball of flour, but a good scone, because there are so many out there. And I will say my very favorite scone is the cranberry scone from Balthazar.
Who would have thought?
It's so simple.
I have this thing about scones.
You don't like them?
I like them. I have to have a good one. And you know what the thing about scones? I think they have to be, it's like biscuits. To me, they have to be really fresh.
Yeah, they have to be really fresh.
You go somewhere, if you get a biscuit that's, I don't know, been sitting for 3 hours, it's not good.
Yeah, that's
unless
true.
You reheat it.
A nice fresh scone, though.
Yeah, you're right. That's the key, because I think you always picture scones at Starbucks. You're like, how long? First of all, what factory did that come from?
Exactly.
What kind of flour are they using? Hello.
I make a pretty righteous scone, too.
Cannot wait to
I love making a good scone with a good, like, whipped kind of compound butter. And my number one favorite thing with wheat, like a wheat pastry, is unequivocally 100% always and forever a good croissant. And I say croissant, not croissant, because
croissant.
I'm from New York City.
Not a crescent.
I say a croissant, a croissant.
Okay. Well, obviously, for top three, I mean, who would I be fooling if I wasn't going to say I can't say my number one yet. Number three, I love a waffle.
Oh,
I love waffles.
You know what? You're a real waffle promoter.
And I've
you're
said
working
this
for
before.
Big waffle?
I've said that I love waffles. My waffle iron broke. Zara wanted to use my waffle
iron. Yes, I did.
But it's okay. I haven't made waffles in ages. But the best ones are the yeast-raised waffles, overnight yeast-raised waffles by Marianne Cunningham breakfast book. You can look it up online. Mm-hmm. I love that recipe. You basically put some ingredients together, stir it in a bowl, let it rise overnight. With milk, and people are like, oh my God, will I get sick? No, it'll get sour and delicious.
It's fine.
And then the next morning, you'll have fabulous waffles. Number two, my second favorite thing ever. You know, I have to say, what would I do without dredging things in flour? And you know what I'm going to say is that, and I got this from you, the francese batter.
Oh, yeah.
Which francese batter is basically you dredge a bunch of any kind of protein or, you know, chicken or fish or even vegetables you could use in flour and egg.
Yeah, flour then egg. And it makes this delicious puffy,
but you couldn't
fluffy
do it with,
coating.
You couldn't do it without flour.
No, you have to.
Because
it must have flour.
It must have flour.
And wheat flour, really. It doesn't work very well with alternative flours.
No, and right when you said that, you made me think of that flour called Wondra flour.
Yeah, my mom loves it.
Wondra flour is pre-cooked flour. They basically hydrate it, cook it, dry it, and then repowder it so it doesn't have, there's no lag time.
You can add it right to a sauce.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to say my number one thing. I mean, what would I do without a pastry crust?
Oh, like a pie crust?
Yeah, pie crust. I always have them in the freezer. I'm actually out. I just got butter today. And I make a quadruple batch.
Oh, smart.
So I always have a pastry crust. That way, if you ever need to make an emergency quiche, an emergency tart, you pull it out. And you know what? You only have to pull it out for like 15 minutes out of the freezer.
Yeah.
You bang that thing with a rolling pin.
Yeah, totally.
Thaws out.
What is an emergency quiche? Like, what would happen in a real quiche emergency? What would that look like to you?
I don't know. Let's say it's like Saturday morning and your friends call and they're like, oh my gosh, you completely forgot to put in your iCal that it's a baby shower. Oh, actually, my last emergency quiche was I went to a marathon party.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, I cannot believe I didn't make anything. Like, this is so inappropriate of me.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second. I do have an emergency quiche, or I have an emergency dough in my freezer.
That's great.
And pretty much I would say most people have eggs. And then usually you can find some scraps. I bet you have an onion.
Kitchen leavings, yeah, as
you
we
have
call
an
them.
Onion.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like going to the bottom of your produce drawer, and I'm sure you can find some parsley sprays.
Yeah, find your soggiest vegetables and throw them in a bowl. It's life's back with the quiche.
Worst case scenario, throw some dried dill.
Or a canary.
Yeah.
Worst scenario, take your canary, roast it.
But yeah, I mean, you've got to have a pastry crust, and that's the best thing.
Amazing.
I don't know. I feel like just simplicity, right?
Yeah.
I'm not even going to say bread because that's completely Duh. Separate and obvious.
And also, shout out, we record each week from this beautiful studio here at Roberta's Pizza, which has delicious pizza and also delicious bread. And our girl, Amelia Hall, is the head baker here. And she makes fabulous, fabulous breads. Remember that name. She's a queen of bread.
That's right. And they wouldn't be in business if it weren't for flour.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yep. All right. Well, this was quite an engaging episode,
I don't know
honestly.
What to do after I'm exhausted.
Well, yeah, I have to take a nap on a flour sack.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to look this up. I'm going to, you know, flour sack dresses, I think, are making a comeback.
They're gorge. Listen, guys, if you don't rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast, I will find you and hunt you down. If I find out that you're listening and not rating, reviewing, subscribing to this and all the other podcasts, it's judgment day for you, and you do not want to feel my wrath. I'm very, very mean.
Exactly. Again, check out some of the other fabulous shows on Heritage Radio Network. There are a ton of shows all around food and beverage, beer, cider, farming.
Women and food.
Women and food. There's a topic for every personality, which is why we love it here. So thank you for that. And again, email us at lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com if you have any questions, recipe, tips. You just want to chat.
Yeah, if you're angry about something that we've said, please send your email. We'll never read it.
Exactly. Well, thank you again. Happy cooking, happy weeks, happy eating. And that's it.
Happy birthday to me. Today's my birthday.
Oh.
Just kidding.
Oh, darn.
Okay, hasta la pasta, babes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.